the nation's leading heart health organizations have released new guidelines that would change the way doctors assess and treat cardiovascular risk.
About a quarter of Americans over age 45 already take cholesterol-lowering statin drugs. Under the new guidelines, that number could grow a lot as the focus shifts from bad cholesterol levels to other risk factors. You can join in at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. What do you think of these new guidelines? You can also send an email, talk@WPR.org.
Joining us now to discuss these new guidelines is Dr. Patrick McBride. He is a professor of medicine and associate director of the Preventive Cardiology Program at the University of Wisconsin Medical School. He also served on the panel that developed the new guidelines. Dr. McBride, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to start with the need for the new guidelines in the first place. What led to this process, and how long have these guidelines been in development?
We spent the last 5 years reviewing all the evidence and developed these guidelines very carefully. The need for the new guidelines is based on a number of things. The last guidelines came out 12 years ago, and there's been lots of new research and lots of new evidence we felt was very important to include in the new guidelines, as well as a major shift in the health of the American population. You know, there's been a very dramatic increase in the incidence of overweight and obesity, as well as a big shift in the diversity of our population with a far greater number of people at risk.
So the headlines that we have been seeing since these guidelines came out yesterday have to do with the amount of people who might wind up taking statins as a result of this. But talk a little bit about the process of arriving at some of these conclusions. I mean, it took 5 years to get here. Are you pretty happy with the way things came out?
Well, the major risk that we talked about was making sure the appropriate people got on the medication. I'm very happy with the conclusions because they were very carefully thought out. What we did was took a great deal of time to make sure that we looked at all of the evidence, both the pros and the cons, the benefits and the risks of treatment for all different types of cholesterol treatment and all the people who could be candidates. So we wanted to be very sure that we made sure the right people got on treatment. You know, the population's aging with the aging of baby boomers, and we were trying to make sure that we found that the people that were at greatest risk got on treatment. So, in fact, for clinicians, the guidelines changed very subtly, and we tried to make things much simpler than the previous guidelines. We still made sure that clinicians estimated a person's risk before they started treatment. But we eliminated a lot of laboratory tests after they went on treatment. We made sure that patients got on treatment. The best news is that almost all of these cholesterol medicines now are generic and inexpensive. And so from a cost-benefit point of view, they're very cost-beneficial.
And I read, there have been a lot of articles on this, of course, but there was a quote in Forbes that caught my eye. And I'm just going to read it to you, and I'd like to get your reaction to it. The huge shift in thinking here is the idea that you don't take a cholesterol drug or a blood pressure medication to fix your high cholesterol or high blood pressure, but to lower your risk of having a heart attack or stroke. Does that sound about right to you?
Sort of.
Okay.
So it depends. You know, all people can't be treated equally here because there are people that inherit cholesterol problems, and those cholesterol problems need to be treated, you know, to lower their cholesterol or improve their cholesterol. And then there are people with multiple risk factors. So people who have diabetes and high blood pressure and are overweight and who have had a heart attack or who have other risk factors. And when they take cholesterol medicine, for example, who have a moderately or modestly elevated cholesterol, they're getting a number of benefits, including some things like inflammation. So it may be a little less about their cholesterol as about reducing risk. So it really depends on the person. And that's why, in the end, the decision about treatment is a decision between the patient and their doctor.
And as I understand it, and you've addressed this a little bit, but the risk factors we're talking about are much more than just, you know, here are your cholesterol numbers, we're going to prescribe a statin for you. They're taking a lot of other factors into account. You mentioned genetic predisposition and so forth.
Yeah, that's what's really important. You know, what I've seen in a lot of the press and what I've heard on radio and television is a lot of general sweeping statements. And the paper that came along with our cholesterol guidelines is a risk assessment paper. And what it does is it says, take you and evaluate your overall risk, your family's history, your genetics, your behaviors, your risk factors for heart disease, and make an individualized decision for you and about your risk in the next 10 years and your risk in a lifetime, and decide if the treatment is something that might be useful to you. And then it says what your risk and benefits are. And then you and your doctor can decide, because it's very different. So what I've read in a lot of news reports is a person should or shouldn't do that. That's really harmful to have a statement like that, because for somebody with heart disease, that's a bad statement, or somebody with diabetes, or somebody with a genetic cholesterol disorder, they should be getting treatment, because our evidence is very powerful about that, that it's a great benefit to them. So those are decisions that shouldn't be made in a newspaper, but should be made in the doctor's office.
And the other big headline that I've been seeing anyway has to do with the number of people who might wind up taking some of these medicines as a result of these new guidelines. I don't remember the exact figures, but the number is very substantial hike. Does that sound right to you as well, that we might wind up as a result of these new guidelines seeing a lot more people taking these sort of statin medications and that sort of thing?
No. So I've looked at some of this arithmetic too. You know, as a panel, we did some of these estimates. And there should be some more people that are on cholesterol medicines, that's for sure, because there are so many high-risk people out there that aren't seeking appropriate medical care. As we know, we've got over 50 million uninsured people in the country that don't have access. And so, of course, there are some high-risk people out there that should be on treatment. And there are people that aren't following with their doctor regularly. There are people on treatment that are very low-risk that shouldn't be. So these medicines, in some doctors' view, are so good that I think they have some low-risk people on them. What we're really trying to clarify in this guideline is who are the right people, the most appropriate people for treatment. And, yeah, these are very safe and very effective treatment, contrary to some reports, because our evidence was clear about that. And there are certainly people that get side effects from some of these medications, but that percentage is quite low. And this guideline will suggest that there'll be more people on them, but not some of the numbers we've seen thrown about the media.
And so I have to ask, though, where are the, because I got to tell you, I read a bunch of articles and almost everyone said that, you know, they focused very heavily on this. Are they just not reading the entire report and just cherry picking stuff out of it?
You know, it's partly true and partly not, because we know, and when you look at the scientific evidence, that most people that have heart disease and diabetes these days, fortunately, are getting treatment, or at least offered it. But a lot of them aren't. So that's a group that more people should be on treatment. We know most of the people that are at moderate to high risk of heart disease that haven't had a heart attack or stroke yet aren't being offered treatment. So that's certainly a group that there'll be more people on treatment. But there are some low-risk people on treatment that don't need to be. And so we want to reduce those people.
We've got a caller who would like to join in. Scott is with us now from Highland. Hi, Scott.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call. I've heard this all over the news today, and honestly, I'm a little angry because, well, first of all, I'm 51 years old, and I had stents 5 years ago, and so I've been doing a lot of research on my own, trying to find out what studies are out there and whatnot, and it seems like your recommendations here are not talking much about diet, and, you know, diet is the key to health. It's all, what it seems to me on the surface is let's find a way just to give drugs to everybody and kind of bypass the problem in the first place.
Scott, thanks for the call. Let's let Dr. McBride take a crack at that.
Well, there's a full comprehensive report that accompanies our report that is on diet and lifestyle. It's a lifestyle report. It talks about physical activity and weight and diet. So very comprehensive. And we make a very clear point that that's a key and that's the first step. For somebody like our caller, though, that's had heart disease and stents, there's very strong evidence that a person like that should be on these cholesterol-lowering medicines, the statins, because it makes a really big difference. They're complementary, so somebody can't be on one of these medicines and have poor nutrition or not be exercising or taking care of themselves. They go hand in hand, and that's why our reports go hand in hand.
So as we look ahead, I mean, these guidelines are brand new. When do you start working on the next set of guidelines? Is that work that starts right now, or do you wait and see for a couple of years how these go and then go from there?
Well, generally, we wait to see when there's enough new evidence. You know, if there are new studies, new treatments, then we say then there's enough information together that we ought to reconvene. So we probably wait a few years for more good scientific information. You know, one other point the caller makes is a lot of people try to do their own research. Unfortunately, you know, the Internet is full of so much misinformation that it's hard to get really good, sound scientific information unless somebody is an expert at it. So that's what this panel did, was use really sound methods to get the best information, good science. And so I think it's a really good resource for the public as well as professionals.
And if people want to take a look at the guidelines for themselves, because it sounds as though you are encouraging people to actually take a look at these things, where's a good place for them to go and get a look at these guidelines?
Go to American Heart Association's website, which is heart.org. It's a site that really puts things together very well for both the public and professionals. It's a really great resource.
Well, Dr. McBride, thanks so much for being with us today.
It's my pleasure.
Appreciate your time. Dr. Patrick McBride has been with us. He is a professor of medicine and the associate director of the Preventive Cardiology Program at the University of Wisconsin Medical School.